back in my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here. I don't know, something happened to the sound. It just dropped. Welcome to Friday night's program. Glad you could make it. Oh, well. The usual gremlins, I guess. We have the next edition of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe for your listening pleasure tonight, probably at the bottom of the second hour. So stick around for that. It is thrills and chills, to say the least. We will get to the couple of big stories today. The visit to Buchenwald by President Obama and today. But more importantly, I think, the reaction of people from his visit to Cairo yesterday. Apparently, his approach was appreciated in the Middle East, and not just the Middle East, but all over the Muslim world. Back at home, the usual psychopaths were going crazy, which no one, I mean, it's no big surprise. When you hear pigs like Limbaugh and Hannity and Inhofe and the rest of these people screaming about Obama, you know that he is doing the right thing. So anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later. Couple of emails first. This is from Demetra, who writes, "Hey, Mike, I was driving home listening to your show on Wednesday evening. I was happy to hear you say you were proud of our president. I felt the same way after hearing the speech he gave to the Muslim world," excuse me, "in Egypt." I guess she meant she was driving home Thursday. When did he give the speech, Kathy? Thursday? No, it was Wednesday. Okay. "I voted for Obama, and since he's been elected, I have not agreed with many of his appointments and have been disappointed in some of his actions and inactions. But I have to believe right now that he is truly a good man and has good intentions for our country. At this point, we don't have much else to hope for, do we? If Obama hadn't won, my husband and I were getting ready to leave for Canada. I realize I sound a bit naive, but hope is all I have left." And it's signed fellow Truth Seeker, Demetra, and her last name. Thanks, Demetra. From vetvoice.com, which is a progressive website set up and run by veterans of, I think mostly of the Gulf War and our invasion of Iraq under George Bush Jr. But our military affairs correspondent sent this to me. It's from Major Matthew, that's Matthew Alexander, the Air Force interrogator responsible for obtaining the information that led to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi without resorting to torture or so-called enhanced interrogation. Matthew Alexander's written a book now, How to Break a Terrorist, and actually it was released about a year ago, and he has since written for and appeared on major media outlets around the country. But he has a thing at vetvoice.com about how Obama's speech in the Middle East, in Cairo the other day, actually makes us safer. And he says that for those looking for a concrete example of how Obama's speech makes us safer, let me offer one. His quoting of the Quran was monumental in bridging the divide between Western and Muslim cultures and ensuring our cooperation against extremists. While conducting interrogations of high-level al-Qaeda leaders in Iraq, my team and I often sat down face-to-face with some of the most hardened terrorists, the men behind the wave of suicide bombings. Instead of using waterboarding, we got to know our detainees and discovered that the key to securing cooperation starts with dialogue. One of these men, a Sunni imam caught red-handed blessing suicide bombers, went from telling me during our first meeting that, quote, if he had a knife, he would cut my throat, end quote, to cooperation in less than 3 days. Another man went from being a high-ranking al-Qaeda spiritual advisor to trusted informant. And what Matthew Alexander says is both detainee and interrogator have needs when they face each other in those little interrogation rooms. Matthew says the interrogator needs intelligence information and the detainee needs knowledge about his predicament. That exchange of information in the interrogation room depends on cooperation or negotiation. The process is expedited when we break down the misunderstandings between our cultures before we meet. Neither side benefits from stereotypes. It's only through cultural understanding that we can progress our conversations and find common ground to work together. And then he says, President Obama's quoting of the Quran was monumentally important in dispelling the belief by some Muslims that Americans are prejudiced against Islam. I, Matthew writes, have often brought my copy of the Quran into the interrogation room. It was the copy I've read and was given to me from by a Saudi during a prior tour in the Middle East. By handling the Quran with respect and quoting from it, I was able to establish rapport very quickly with detainees. Then he says, this type of respect for Islam also undercuts al-Qaeda's ability to recruit new fighters. The effect of the president's speech in Cairo will be measured in future American lives saved. Now, former Major Matthew Alexander, the Air Force interrogator, is saying, of course, is based on the experience his and other interrogators who refused to resort to torture and used instead techniques developed and published not just in the Army manual, but also techniques that people who understand how to get information from someone, how to establish rapport and get information. If you listen to this freak from Oklahoma, is he a senator? James Inhofe. How can people elect someone like that? Inhofe today, we're not going to play the sound for you because he's such a moron to begin with. He's such a gutter snipe. But, you know, he's questioning who Obama, to whom Obama has the greatest loyalty, to Muslims or to his own country. He's the president, for Christ's sake. Now, you would expect that kind of comments from radio talk show hosts on the right, which is 99.9% of them. But this guy's a senator. He's a senator. And he's questioning the allegiance of the president of the United States. I discovered something today that I'm kind of ashamed to admit. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, are you really ashamed or does it just scare you? This awareness that I had today. I guess it scares me rather than shaming me. It scares me. But I discovered today after listening for, I had to do a lot of running around today and had Sirius radio on in the car and in the pickup truck and was listening to CNN and listening to comments on some of the right-wing crazy websites. Right-wing crazy radio programs that Sirius carries. They carry left-wing and right-wing, carry everybody. So I listen to this stuff today. Normally I stay away from it because to me it's just toxic. It's like toxic waste dump. Every right-wing radio or television program is like a toxic waste dump. If you get too close to it, you get skin diseases and you can't breathe properly. And eventually you get cancer or brain disease. That's all those places are, no matter where you come in contact with them. So, you know, I approach this with a lot of trepidation listening today. But I had to find out what the animals, the scum in this country were saying about an amazing speech. Like I said the other night, after the speech, the day of the speech, on the day after the speech, it was astonishing that an American president would have the courage in the presence to say the things that he said. He was at once trying to build bridges, but at the same time, admonishing where admonishment was needed in a diplomatic way. We're going to post a link. Let me digress just a second. We're going to post a link at our website tonight that Max Blumenthal was in Jerusalem during Obama's speech. And he went around from bar to bar to bar talking with teenagers and 20-somethings who were there, Jewish kids from the United States. We're going to put the link up so you can look at it. It's about a 3.5-minute video. And it's going to, is it up already? Oh, it's up already. Okay. It's going to make you weep when you see this. It's up now if you want to go look at it during the break. We'll be right back. I'm going to tell you what it was that I realized today. I'm Mike Malloy. I wish you would. It takes a whole lot of loving to make me feel good.
Seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Also, Sharon, our military affairs correspondent, sent this in today, too. She has a question here. Has the entire Republican Party gone bat poop crazy? Only she didn't say poop. Not our Sharon. And what she sent me is this thing from Media Matters today that pulled it off of the Pig Man's program, wherein Rush Limbaugh refers to the Holocaust that murdered 6 million Jews. He refers to the Holocaust as something the Germans did 60 years ago. Before I share this with you, back to what I said right before the break, this awful realization that I had today that was first shameful and then I realized it was frightening. And that is, at some point, either recently or not so recently, I'm inside my mind, I apparently crossed a line someplace where I realized that if situation in this country were to really get out of hand, situation here, there are other people who have citizenship here, as I do, that I would have no problem in shooting. Like I said, it was a shameful thing because to come to that. But then it makes me frightened now because I realize how true it is. There are so many people that are destroying this country right now, especially in media. And if absolute chaos was visited upon this country, a complete breakdown of societal restraints, I have no doubt. Now, I tried to relate the feeling, like, what are you doing? And the only thing I could come up with is it's probably the same feeling that people had during the Civil War in this country, in the South and the North. While we were all citizens of the same country, hadn't been for that long, less than a century, but we were all citizens of the same country, the hatred was so deep and abiding at that point. And how it got to that point, I that still kind of puzzles me. But it was so deep and abiding that armies of the North and the South were willing, cousins in some instances, people from the same families, were willing to die. How many did we lose in the Civil War? 600,000? Was that the total? That seems high, but I think that's right. So, I had that realization today after listening to some of this stuff that is going out over the airwaves in the United States about Obama and about his efforts. And I think about so many radio and television talking heads, whether it is political talk or religious talk, that are doing such damage. It's almost like, what do these son of a bitches want? What is it that they want? And the answer is very simple to me. They want a kind of elitist fascism that just completely does away with anything except their religious craziness, their political craziness. And it occurred to me today, maybe it wasn't a news flash, so to speak. Maybe it wasn't a moment of deep, abiding awareness. Maybe it's just always been there. Maybe you feel the same way. You just don't want to deal with it. I don't know. But it finally occurred to me that given the kind of poison that these people are pumping into popular discourse every single day, and you know who I'm talking about, and they are legion. There are so many of them. I don't care if they're so-called Christians or they're so-called conservatives or neo-Nazi, right-wing, neocon talking heads. It doesn't make any difference to me what kind of puke and filth they're putting out there. They are putting it out. And I've had just, enough. And it shocks me. Every single day it shocks me that there are corporations, there is money in this country that pays to put that out, that pays to make sure. Just like we were talking about that station in Sacramento, the morning show where they, the filth on that program, we're talking about killing children suffering from gender dysphoria, who, an honest to God problem. When I think about the people, the way they talk about gays on there, the way they talk about progressives or liberals or blacks or Jews or Catholics or now, do I bust up on the religion? Yes, of course I do. Of course I do. But these people, about doctors who may perform abortions, we're so close to the edge here of these people advocating just go out and shoot, O'Reilly or Hannity or Savage. Savage busting up on children with autism, busting up on their parents. I mean, it's astonishing to me. It's almost become, a subtext of the program. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? I used to say that. It goes way beyond that all of a sudden. It really does. So now I have to deal with this, and it bothers me that I have to carry this around inside of my consciousness that if chaos ensued, I would have no problem whatsoever killing people in this country that I think are destroying it.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malone.
Before the hour. Limbaugh today. Our military affairs correspondent sent the link to me from Media Matters for America. It's pretty astonishing. If I were of the Jewish persuasion, I would do everything in my power to see that Limbaugh had absolutely nothing to do in a financial way with me, if I were Jewish, after what he said today. There are ways to demean the deaths of 6 million, which affected probably 50 million, 100 million people. We have friends here in Atlanta whose children are about my age, and their parents are Holocaust survivors. They fled from the one couple I'm thinking about, the husband, fled from Germany, from Poland, and through Germany, and somehow made it to Italy, where my friend was born, and then here. These are Jews I'm talking about. And it goes on and on. All my life, I've known Holocaust survivors once I realized what the Holocaust was. Rush Limbaugh, today on his program, went after Obama when he gave his speech. Elie Wiesel was there. Angela Merkel, the chancellor, is that what they, chancellor of Germany? I don't know who the fourth guy standing there, but they gave a series of speeches. I caught two or three of them about the Buchenwald death camp where they were standing. About the most moving part was to listen once again to Elie Wiesel. I've not paid that much attention to him recently. He said some things about the Middle East that I found to be repugnant, coming from someone who has suffered to the degree that he suffered. But that's politics, and he wasn't talking politics today. But it was a very moving speech. Limbaugh, on the air today, said the following. Did you see Angela Merkel standing next to the guy? That's Obama. Put this in perspective. She was standing there, and she's not happy because, you know, he's, well, they're not getting along, and they haven't gotten along ever. So there he is. He's at Buchenwald today, the concentration camp, and he is beating Germany up. He's ripping them to shreds over something they did 60 years ago, one day after praising all of Islam. Now listen to me, if you're Jewish, if this is not offensive, and I realize we are already into Shabbos, it is Friday night, the sun has set here in the east, so you may not even be listening. Maybe you'll pick it up on the podcast. Rush Limbaugh says that Obama is ripping the Germans to shreds over something they did 60 years ago. Now, of course, he was not ripping anyone to shreds. And Obama was not beating Germany up. He was talking specifically about Nazis. But, of course, Limbaugh is a Nazi. One day, he says, after praising all of Islam, which is not what Obama did at all. This is where the kernel of that rage that I feel has finally erupted inside of me. That millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars are spent to put this kind of filth on the air in this country every day, coast to coast, border to border. And there's no way to stop it. So he went on. Limbaugh did. Now, can you imagine? He's ripping them to shreds over something they did 60 years ago. Can you imagine? Now, of course, Elie Wiesel gets up there and he does his thing. He does his thing. But it's 65 years here or close to it. And so she's up there. And did you see the look on her face? It's more than just solemnity on her face. Trust me, my friends, I know these things. And he's up there and he's ripping Germany, what it did 60, 65 years ago, blah, 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 blah. One day after praising to the hilt Islam and talking about how Islam is a nation, America is a Muslim nation and so forth. Trust me on this. She wasn't happy. He's ripping them to shreds over something they did 60 years ago. Oh, my God. And then he says this. Obama yesterday in his outreach of love and please respect me and please raise my approval numbers in his speech in Cairo. He admonished the Israelis to stop building settlements on the West Bank. So the Israelis responded today by increasing their construction of what they're now calling Obama huts. Although these huts that they are building in the West Bank are going to be much larger than the 6x9 square foot hut his brother still lives in Kenya. You see what I mean? Something the Germans did over 60 years ago. So it doesn't really count, does it, you sick son of a bitch, Limbaugh? Man, when the lights go out, I want him. Oh, God. There's more. But, it's Friday night. I hate to get into this stuff on Friday night because, you know, Friday night is like liberation night. So Barack Obama's brother is living in a hut in Kenya. And Angela Merkel is not happy because Obama is ripping Germany to shreds over something they did 60 years ago. Are you Jewish, gentle listener, and you're listening to this program tonight? Obviously, if you are, you're not Orthodox or you're not an observant Jew. But if you are listening tonight, or if you pick this up on the podcast, does this mean anything to you that this filthy, obese man who sits in his studio every single day, who is paid, what is it, $50 million a year to refer to the Holocaust as something they did 60, 65 years ago? I mean, you know, he's, and then, of course, Elie Wiesel gets up there and does his thing. Doesn't that mean anything to you? If you're Jewish, even if you're not Jewish, if you are a rational, empathetic human being, and hear this guy who claims his audience of millions a week, and he says this. This is precisely the stuff that Father Coughlin said back in the 30s that helped lead to the destruction of 6 million Jews. The distance between the Catholic priest, Father Coughlin, who was on the NBC radio network back in the 30s until they finally got rid of him because he became too pro-Nazi, he and Lindbergh and Henry Ford and E.I. DuPont and the rest of them, the distance between Father Coughlin and Rush Limbaugh is inches. Inches. 80 years ago, and it's inches. And yet this man, Limbaugh, crowed about his contract that he signed, $50 million a year from Premier Radio Networks. You know, they love me. God damn it, they love me. The Holocaust. Something Germany did 60 years ago. Okay. You can go to MediaMatters.org if you want to read the whole thing. We had talked about that radio station, KRXQ, their morning show, Rob, Arnie, and Dawn, a show where they were grinding on children, and I guess enough people had enough. I got this from, I don't see. You didn't sign your name. Hello, Mike, longtime listener from L.A. Just thought you would like to know that some advertisers have pulled their ads from that Sacramento station that made fun of transgendered kids, which is appalling. I've copied and pasted the article from Planet Out, which is an online gay magazine. This is from the Associated Press. Ads yanked after radio host's transgender remarks. Bank of America, Verizon, Chipotle, and other companies have pulled advertising from a Sacramento radio station after talk show hosts referred to transgender children as freaks with mental disorders. During a May 28 show, one of the three hosts at, on KRXQ's Rob, Arnie, and Dawn show said he would hit his son with a shoe if the kid put on if he put on high heels. Another said he would tell a boy he's a little idiot if he asked to wear a dress. Officials with Bank of America and Chipotle Mexican Grill Incorporated said Friday their companies pulled advertising because they found the comments offensive. Spokesman Joe Good, Bank of America, said, "We listened to the segment and the follow-up comments and found it quite difficult to defend." Representatives of Verizon Communications, Nissan Motor Company, and Carl's Jr. Restaurants also said they stopped advertising. And it goes on. This is from the Associated Press. All I can say is that is excellent, excellent news. Ring loud and clear. Well, tomorrow I'd be gone because you can't say that on the radio. I'd really like to help you out. That's just the way it goes.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's good coffee, too. Superbeans.com. Speaking of which, coming up at the bottom of the hour, coming the next episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gum Show, written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the mighty Malloy Radio Players. So stick around for that in about 40 minutes, huh? Roz writes in regarding CNN, Mike, Lou Dobbs is doing his share to foment trouble where Obama's concerned. Also interesting, the PNAC crew, Project for New American Century, you know, are out in full force again, the same jackals that were sniffing around in the early years of Bush. Why on earth do we need to hear from Bush's old speechwriters? Yet today I saw two of them doing everything they could to call the president a traitor. CNN is definitely showing a right-wing tilt in their discussions again. I think the criticism of Israel is mainly what this is all about, so they had to bring out the usual suspects. There's absolutely nothing neutral in most of CNN's reporting. Their shows are more like opinion pieces. Boy, it gets me down when I see that, Mike. Another useless one is Campbell Brown. Her show is all bias and mostly bull. They should think of changing the title, Roz. I have yet to hear any criticism of Israel from Barack Obama. In fact, his statement that the bond between the United States and Israel is unbreakable. I mean, this is what drives people in the Middle East mad, because they know that here in the United States, even an acknowledgement of the existence of the Palestinian people is somehow a slap, a kick in the groin to Israel. That's how it's interpreted in this country. And people in the Middle East know that. They know that the Israel chorus over here begins immediately, as soon as Barack Obama even acknowledges that the United States overthrew the government of Iran in 1953, that the Palestinian people are living under occupation. As soon as that is even acknowledged, that the war in Iraq was a war of choice, then they bring out the hit squad, the political hit squad, and maybe more than that. Well, on June 27th, coming up in Louisville, there is going to be a celebration at a place called the New Bethel Baptist Church. I left a phone number for this guy, and Jake Starr. He has his phone number up on the website, and he never called me back. I left a message. What did I say? Anyway, here's what it says on their website. Now, this is a Baptist church, and you people wonder why. In celebration of July 4th and our rights as Americans, the New Bethel Baptist Church will be hosting an open carry celebration for all who support First and Second Amendment rights. It will be held on Saturday, June 27th, the weekend before July 4th. It will begin at 5 p.m. and picnic food will be served. We are asking responsible handgun owners to attend this service openly wearing their sidearm. This will be a cold range carry, meaning handguns must be unloaded and in a secure holster. Area gun store and firing range owners will be invited to attend and tell about their services. There will be patriotic music and short presentation concerning responsible gun ownership and Second Amendment rights. There will also be a raffle to win a handgun. All that is asked is that you bring a sidearm, a friend who has a sidearm, and a canned good for local food bank. God damn. Here's the phone number. You want the phone number? Here it is. I'm going to give it to you. It's on their website. Here it is. Oh, the New Bethel Baptist Church. Get your pencil ready. I'll give it to you. At their website, they have their mission statement. Listen to this. The purpose of the New Bethel Baptist Church is to... here it is. New Bethel exists to glorify God by our worship, which includes growth in grace, building up the church family, empowering people for service, and locating God's people among the masses. Our vision, to build a fully functioning Christian community that is Bible-based, Christ-centered, Spirit-certified, and culturally aware. Our mission, turning invisible Christians into visible Christians. But if you want information about the Open Carry Picnic that this Baptist church is going to be holding Sunday or Saturday, June 27th, praise God. All we ask is you bring a sidearm, praise God, and a can of something for the local food bank. You can call Jake Starr, and here is his phone number, 502-935-3257. Once again, Jake Starr at the New Bethel Baptist Church. His phone number is 502-935-3257. Now, if you would pay attention as the ushers move amongst you with the baskets, we will now take the offering. Oh, there's more. I've got more here. Oh, my God. The Associated Press has picked up on this now, too. It's at yahoo.com. John Phillips, an Arkansas pastor who was shot twice while leading a service at his former church in 1986, said a house of worship is no place for firearms. He said, quote, a church is designated as a safe haven. It's a place of worship. He was shot by a church member's relative. Still has a bullet in his spine. The pastor said, quote, it is unconscionable to me to think that a church would be a place that you would even want to bring a weapon, end quote. Now, wait a second. I said it's the New Bethel Baptist Church. It is not. It's a Protestant church. It's a member of the Assemblies of God. Okay, well, that makes... Oh, and he is... the preacher is a former Marine and handgun instructor. And he said he expected some backlash, but he heard only a little bit of criticism of the gun event. Are we... is that it? Is the program over? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
And licensing.
If you can stand it, right? All right, the next up in our line of crazy religious stories for this evening, this is a Baptist story, a former Southern Baptist Convention officer, Wiley Drake. He was the Southern Baptist Convention, and by the way, that is the second biggest religious organization in America, second only to the Catholic Church. Wiley Drake, the Southern Baptist Convention's former second vice president, said on his Crusade radio program, quote, I am glad George Tiller is dead, end quote. As you know, Dr. Tiller, one of the few doctors in America who still performed a controversial, I love the way they say that, late-term abortion procedure, was gunned down in the foyer of Reformation Lutheran Church in Wichita, Kansas. Wiley Drake, who is the pastor of First Southern Baptist Church in Buena Park, California, said he prayed nearly 10 years for the salvation of Dr. Tiller, the medical director of the Women's Health Care Services Clinic. But about a year ago, the Reverend Drake said he switched to what he calls imprecatory prayer. That's where they, I've had that done to me here in Atlanta. That's where they pray you dead. They will set up a prayer circle, or they'll get some of the mouth breathing head bobbers and say, "Now pray this person into hell. Pray this person dead." You remember that, Kathy? When that happened to me, I just gave them all the finger. Wiley Drake, the former second vice president of Southern Baptist Convention, said on his program, "I said to the Lord, 'Lord, I pray back to you the Psalms where it says that they are to become widowers and their children are to become orphans and so forth. And, you know, we began calling for those imprecatory prayers because Dr. Tiller had obviously turned his back on God again and again and again.'" End quote. Later, the Reverend Drake told Fox News Radio's Alan Colmes that he is also praying imprecatory prayers against President Obama. When Drake was discussing praying for Tiller's death, he was asked if there were others for whom he was offering imprecatory prayers. Drake hesitated before answering that there are several. He said, quote, "The usurper that is in the White House is one, B. Hussein Obama," end quote. Later in the interview, Alan Colmes returned to Drake's answer to make sure he heard him right. Colmes said, quote, "Are you praying for his death?" end quote. Drake replied, "Yes." Colmes said, "So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States?" Drake replied, "Yes." Colmes asked Drake if he was concerned that by saying that he might be placed on a Secret Service or FBI watch list, if he believed it appropriate to talk or pray that way. Drake said, quote, "I think it's appropriate to pray the word of God. I'm not saying anything. What I am doing is repeating what God is saying, and if that puts me on somebody's list, then I'll just have to be on their list." Then Combs asked one more time, quote, "You would like for the President of the United States to die?" end quote. Drake responded, "If he does not turn to God and does not turn his life around, I'm asking God to enforce imprecatory prayers that are throughout the scripture that would cause him death. That's correct." End quote. Then goes on to say, most of the half-hour interview on the Alan Colmes Show is premium programming available by paid subscription only. Oh, that's like our podcast. But a 5-minute video clip appeared as a top video on the Fox News Radio website. Drake said he didn't pray for Tiller to be murdered, only that God would take his life by some method, and that he absolutely believed that God wanted the doctor dead. Drake also said he did not believe Tiller's accused killer is a pro-life Christian. Oh, okay. Southern Baptist Convention officials did not offer any comments regarding the Reverend Drake's remarks. How about that, huh? Now, when that happened to me here, that was because it all ties in the reason I carry a gun when I feel that I should be carrying a gun. I don't take one to a state park. I don't take one to Molly's school. I don't take one into the supermarket, but or maybe sometimes I do. It's just you never know. But the reason I wound up with that permit was because my life was threatened repeatedly until finally Atlanta Police Department said, "We can't tell you what to do, but this is what we would suggest. You need to have a permit to carry a weapon." It got that bad. I hate guns. I hate everything about guns. But I also am not quite ready to step off this mortal coil, certainly not by some wild-eyed son of a bitch who thinks he's offing me in the name of some sky spook. That's not going to happen. Trust me on that one. But when word got out that I was now armed and dangerous, I would get phone calls. And eventually, this went on for a long time. Even when I was in Chicago on WLS, I used to get them. Because I get tracked by these crazed sons of bitches. But I would get phone calls about, "You know, we're praying you into hell. There are 30 of us out here tonight, and we are praying you into hell. You are gonna die." You know, and I, That's what the phone calls would say. When I would get emails from these people, of course, the emails would be some trumped up phony ass email addy address. When I would try to respond, like, you know, it says in the Bible, if you want to get ass, you got to bring ass. I would send that back to them, and of course, the email would bounce back to me. But I hate these people. You know, this is what I was talking about earlier tonight. I finally realized I've crossed a line someplace inside my own head. That when the lights go out and chaos ensues, even though it scares me that I'm able to think this way, because I'm thinking this way about people who, for the most part, kind of look like I do, speak the same basic language I speak. I don't mean to suggest that we talk about the same ideas or have the same belief system by any means. But I'm talking about fellow Americans, and I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever at this point. After spending 25 years watching this get to the point that it's at now, I am sorry to say it, but it was started by Ronald Reagan. It started during the Reagan administration. You know, back during Nixon, you didn't have this kind of poison. There was no Pig Limbaugh spewing his garbage out. There were none of his piglet offspring spewing their garbage out. You had people, conservative talk. You had religious talk. There were a few places where there was even liberal talk, but it was not like what has happened. And I hated to see my program become reactive. I used to be proactive, but it's, you know, when you're one of maybe four people, five, six people, on commercial radio, that are putting out the kind of attitude that we put out, the progressive point of view, and the overwhelming hundreds, thousands of talk show hosts in this country pour this poison into the air every single day. You know, I moved from shame to fear very quickly. I'm not the least bit ashamed of saying what I said, and I will say it again and again and again. The people that have turned my stomach are people who just don't care. They'll talk about children with gender specific problems. They'll talk about kids with autism. They'll talk about kids who happen to be gay. They'll in the most vile, filthy, hate-filled way. It's just astonishing. They will attack Barack Obama. With the kind of threats and language. I mean, what kind of a pervert, what kind of a Baptist son of a bitch pervert has the audacity to say, I'm praying somebody dead? and of course that goes to the very core of his religious beliefs. To him, the worst thing that can happen is he becomes dead. But what about your heaven? What about your heaven, dude? Oh, I see. You're afraid that maybe you'll wind up in your hell? Is that it? You keep fear and death because when it comes, it's going to devour you. Too sick to pray. I'm on the run, I can't go run. I'm too sick to pray.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy. Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, let's play another one. Hell, keep them coming. The story about the church is inviting everybody for an open carry picnic. You know, bring your guns and let's all sit around and,
don't have any bullets in them.
Prairie 2 writes in, the Bethel church people can't be all that bad since they believe in canned goods. Because they did ask you to bring a can. Praise be to canned goods. Prairie 2 writes, I noticed they didn't want any loaded guns. Not as stupid as they appear on first blush. Yeah, well. they believe in canned goods? All righty then. This is from Harry in Portland, Oregon, who writes, Mike, thanks for Wednesday's broadcast about religion and the toxic environment that so-called Christian televangelists used to foster hate, which resulted in the death of George Tiller. I concur with your analysis of organized religion and the hatred and division that keeps us from understanding our own collective humanity. I can constantly think of Marx's statement in his critique of religion that religion is the opium of the masses. What I call the phenomenon of American Christianity is 100% bull. I have been an ordained Lutheran pastor for 50 years, and the pure, unadulterated crap in most churches today is enough to make me hurl. Both of my parents were from Denmark. My father was a trained machinist, and my mother was a domestic. They came to the U.S. in 1930. And I was born in 1932. Both of my parents were social democrats. That's my heritage. I grew up in poverty in Jersey City, New Jersey. After high school, I worked in different jobs, tool and die, post office, etc. For their lack of a formal education, both my parents were readers and questioned everything. We'd get the PM newspaper daily and the New York Times on Sunday. I was reading I.F. Stone when I was 14. I was trained in the tradition of liberation theology with the Bible in one hand and the daily newspaper in the other. I was active in the civil rights movement and marched with Dr. King in 1965 in New York City. I'm a deep believer in liberation theology and efforts that people like Archbishop Romero tried to accomplish in El Salvador. There are still some of us around, like Jim Wallace of Sojourners Magazine and others, who truly believe that Jesus stood with the poor and the impoverished and fought injustice and inequality. I don't consider myself religious, but spiritual in trying to connect us all in our common humanity. I saw that kind of compassion with George Tiller, who truly cared for poor women and their plight to receive the care they needed. George Tiller, like Archbishop Romero, should be sainted for the risk he took in helping others and paying the ultimate price. Thanks for the work you do. In the words of Gil Scott Heron, quote, when the people need us more than the symbols we adore, then we can change the world, end quote. Peace. Harry in Portland, Oregon. Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it. Bizarre stuff out there in the world, huh? Aren't you glad you're where you're at, all safe and snugly? Robert Nyman wrote a piece at Truth Out. Nyman is a, I don't have it in front of me. But he takes apart some of the things that Obama said in Cairo the other day. And before doing that, he says that U.S. policy in the broader Middle East over the next 4 years will be judged in the region according to whether the pledges that Obama made in Cairo Thursday are kept. And Nyman says, so it's important for Americans to know what those pledges were, because when right-wing voices in America try to undermine those pledges, they'll be undermining U.S. national security by trying to force Obama to break faith with the Arabs and Muslims of the world to whom he made those pledges Thursday. The president said, quote, I have unequivocally prohibited the use of torture by the United States, and I have ordered the prison at Guantanamo Bay closed by early next year. End quote. This was wildly popular, Nyman writes. Right-wing voices undermine this pledge at our peril. And then he's got some more here, which I want to share with you a little bit later in the program. But coming up to, after this break that is nigh upon us, immediately after this break, we are going to kick back for a moment and get away from all the madness and craziness and slip into the creativity of Bob Alexander, who is our writer and now producer of the segment that we call Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. We have the next episode coming for you right after this break, so stick around for that. We will get back to the, to the really crazy, hostile world, but some old-time style radio coming up here in a moment. So take off your angry face and your thinking cap, while we're in this commercial break and put on your kick back and relax. Smoke them if you got them, and I don't mean cigarettes. Drink a little wine, maybe. Take a break. And Bob Alexander and the Mighty Malloy Radio Players are going to entertain you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. And I won't. Before the hour on the Malloy Show. All right, let's do it. Are you have you kicked back? I got your feet up. All right, I'm about to join you. Oh, here is the next episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe.
It's time once again for Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Tonight's episode: Whom the Gods Wish to Destroy, They First Drive Mad.
Hey, truth seekers. I had just come in from walking the dog. Yeah, the dog. I'd finally accepted the fact that we had a wire-haired fox terrier named Asta. As we came in, Kathy looked up from her computer.
You've got mail.
Hey, come check out this weird email. Have you ever heard of the Uncanny Valley?
As in the San Fernando?
As in the hypothesis introduced by Japanese roboticist Masahiro Mori. According to Wikipedia, Mori's hypothesis states that as a robot or a computer animation of a human being is made more human-like in its appearance and motion, the emotional response from a human being to the robot will become increasingly positive and empathetic until a point is reached beyond which the response quickly becomes that of a strong repulsion. That drop in the positive response is called the Uncanny Valley. In other words, a robot stuck in the Uncanny Valley is no longer seen as a robot doing a passable job at pretending to be human, but is instead seen as a human doing a terrible job at acting like a normal person.
And that explains what?
Well, the email says we should investigate the George W. Bush Presidential Center in the Uncanny Valley.
That's a neat trick. Since they haven't built it yet, they're still raising money. You know, I read in the, 100 days after Bush left office, 100 days, they raised 100 of the 500 million needed for the complex.
Well, this email says it's finished, and it's been finished for months. What's going on?
Hey, where'd that email come from?
Take a look.
Anonymous at superbeans.com. Whoever it was sure covered their tracks pretty well.
Well, what do you think?
What do I think? I think it's a crudely done expositional passage. This rate's a 9, and we should go to Dallas and stroll around the campus of Southern Methodist University and see what's going on. We caught the next plane to Dallas, rented a car, and drove over to the SMU campus as the full moon rose in the Texas sky. Yeah, the dog. Kathy insisted we bring the dog. According to the campus map, the George W. Bush Presidential Center was going to be built near the intersection of SMU Boulevard and Dublin Street. According to the mysterious email, it was already there.
The only building around here is that old auditorium over there.
All right, let's see if we can get in. We walked up to the door. It was unlocked, so we went in. I had the flashlight. Kathy had the dog. The lobby of the auditorium looked like no one had been in there for years. Dust was everywhere, covering everything.
Security's not too tight around here.
Hey, what's that over there in the display case?
Photographs. Pictures of George Bush.
There's one of him as a cheerleader.
Here he is, holding hands with Crown Prince of...
And over here in the bookcase...
Well, that's just a pile of old paper bags.
Some Daniel Steele, a couple of Hardy Boys mysteries...
He shined that flashlight over here.
The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh my God, Mike, the pet goat. Do you know what this means?
Yes, this is the George W. Bush Library. It's just another goddamn Republican scam, and it's perfect.
They raise $500 million.
Throw some crap together.
Keep a big chunk of the money, kick back the rest to the anonymous donors who write it all off, but how are they going to get away with it?
Well, that's the best part. Nobody ever actually visits a Republican presidential library. Never. It doesn't happen. Who in their right mind would ever think about spending part of their vacation at the library of the most despised president in American history?
Let's see what's in the auditorium.
We walked up to the proscenium. At center stage was some sort of projection device with curtains on either side. A small coin box was installed at the foot of the stage.
Let's see, it says, please deposit 2 quarters.
Yeah, that's twice as much as one of our podcasts when you buy your subscription at MikeMalloy.com.
I was wondering how you were going to get that in. You got any quarters?
Suddenly, smoke billowed out on either side of the projector. A column of flames erupted from the center of the device. And from out of the smoke and fire, a huge holographic head emerged.
But I'm the decider.
That was insane. Got any more quarters?
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended.
The dog slipped his leash and was sniffing the curtain to the left of the big bush head. This all seemed strangely familiar to me, and then Astor pulled back the curtain.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Too late. We'd seen too much. The man behind the curtain operating the council walked toward us.
What are you doing here? This building is closed to the public.
The door was open. We walked right in. But the better question is, what are you doing here, Mr. Former Vice President?
Well, to tell you the truth.
Watch it, Mike. He's lying.
No, really. On nights like tonight, I like to come down here and relive my greatest accomplishments, if you will.
Accomplishments? What the hell are you talking about? 2 endless wars, unimaginable death and destruction, billions of dollars wasted.
Trillions, actually. But from my perspective, a series of unparalleled successes, if you will. We stole the election. Twice. Installed a half-wit who on a good day couldn't make a piece of toast without help, and completely looted the treasury for ourselves while engineering the largest transfer of wealth in human history.
Mike, what's wrong with him?
Cheney fell to the stage, and then his head popped off. Kathy, I think we should exit stage left right now.
Asta, come here, boy.
Astor was sniffing around the curtain on the right. He tugged at the cloth, pulling the curtain back to reveal.
Mike, look out!
Good God!
This ain't no flashback, folks. Mike and Kathy are really in trouble this time, but our 6 minutes are up. So be sure to tune in again next time for the heart-stopping conclusion to Whom the Gods Wish to Destroy, They First Drive Mad.
Ah. I like that. That was a good one. That's only part one. All right. Okay. The stunning conclusion will be Monday night. That was produced and written by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. Oh, I just want to do that. I don't want to do this other stuff. I would rather.
You want me to play it again?
No. I mean, I think what we ought to do is change the program to, like a half an hour once a week where we just do, I don't know, just, there are oceans of material out there. All we have, I mean, we've got 8 years of insanity to draw on and just have, Bob write and produce them. But if we did it, you know, that frequently, probably, then he'd want money, right?
Yeah, it's always the pesky thing.
Yeah, and we don't have any.
No. I want all the podcast subscribers out there to raise their hands if they want to hear just all gumshoe all the time. Just let me know.
Probably not. It's just that I love it. That was, it was that kind of radio that I grew up with. Really.
I want all the podcast subscribers out there to raise your hands if that's the kind of radio you grew up with.
You'd be surprised how many people listen to this program grew up with that kind of radio, my dear. But anyway, the conclusion to this episode will be Monday night. And it's a stunner. You are not going to believe the conclusion. Where were we? Oh, yeah, that's right. Barack Obama in the Middle East making promises to everybody. All right. what we're talking about here is what President Obama promised in Cairo, and it's at truthout.org, written by Robert Naiman. And what Naiman is saying is that our policy in the Middle East over the next 4 years is going to be judged according to whether or not the pledges that Obama made in Cairo on Thursday are kept. Very simple. And the right-wing crazy people in this country are going to try their damnedest to force the country into a posture where those pledges could be broken. And I think one of the things, a very real possibility of another attack on this country, probably engineered by the same people who engineered the first one. So even though they're out of power now, political power, they're certainly not out of power, my ass. Out of visible political power now, I guess I should put it that way. So if that were to occur, another attack on the country, engineered by the same people who engineered the first attack on this country, and they were not a bunch of people in Afghanistan or Saudi Arabia. As far as I'm concerned, you believe what you want, I'll believe what I want. It's a shame we can't ever learn, know, see, come in contact with the truth of that story. But anyway, if those forces in this country that are so hell-bent on destroying America and replacing it with a fascist state, if they succeed, it'll only be because the rest of us allowed them to. We are kind of in a state of war right now. So far, it's a non-shooting war against this fifth column that exists in the United States that wants to destroy us. And I think we can't let that happen. I don't think we will let that happen. All right, more of what Obama promised in Cairo when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I'd say the acting's pretty bad. Everyone's stiff. Dialogue so sad. If this were a movie plot, I wouldn't believe it. But if this were a movie, I could.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. On Iran, the president acknowledged the U.S. role in the overthrow of democracy in Iran in 1953. This is one of the things that has Senator James Inhofe's scrotum up around his Adam's apple to the point where he's questioning the patriotism of Barack Obama, right? Obama said, quote, "I understand those who protest that some countries have weapons that others do not. No single nation should pick and choose which nations hold nuclear weapons. That's why I strongly reaffirmed America's commitment to seek a world in which no nations hold nuclear weapons. And any nation, including Iran, should have the right to access peaceful nuclear power if it complies with its responsibilities under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. That commitment is at the core of the treaty, and it must be kept for all who fully abide by it, and I'm hopeful that all countries in the region can share this goal." I'm not sure if are we signatories to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty? Perhaps it was signed and never ratified. There is a fly in that ointment somewhere. But you know, the words are great from the president of the United States. No single nation should pick and choose which nations hold nuclear weapons. That's why I strongly reaffirm America's commitment to seek a world in which no nation hold nuclear weapons. Starting with who, Your Honor? Who should be the first to start dismantling these weapons and then dealing with the innards, the plutonium especially. Is there plutonium in a nuclear bomb unexploded? Hell, I don't even know. Maybe Ben Birch will send me an email. He knows. But if there is seriousness here on the part of Barack Obama, why not start dismantling nuclear weapons? We have 9,000 nuclear warheads. In order to end the Earth, we only need about 20. So why not, as both a symbolic gesture and action in the real world, the President of the United States order, well, you know as well as I do. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? You know, this is a country of cowards to begin with, the United States. We are chock-a-block with whiny-ass, bedwetting, thumb-sucking, hair-twisting cowards right now. We really are. They're all over the place. You want to see a coward? No, I'm not going to say that. Look outside. Next time you're, you know, just driving around town, go into the grocery store, go into a film or dinner, look around you. Probably 95% of the people you see in the room or the theater or the recital hall or wherever are cowards. They're scared to death. They're scared of their own shadow. They're terrified of their own deaths. They're terrified of some boogerman in turbans are going to come over and do something to us, even though, of course, you know, they don't wear turbans. But that shows how stupid and cowardly we've become. I mean, we're afraid of our own shadow. So if Barack Obama started ordering the dismantling of nuclear weapons, can you imagine the howl and scream and running to the bathroom that the right wingers would pump into the airwaves? Can you imagine? How long would it take before some crazed son of a bitch would say, well, I'm going to stop him, and try to climb over the fence of the White House? You know what I'm talking about, right? If the President of the United States is concerned, the next time the U.S. State Department lists those nations that have nuclear weapons, stop dicking around where it concerns Israel and just say Israel probably has 300 nuclear warheads at the minimum. The United States has 9,000. The Ruskies probably have 8,000. I mean, let's get real. See, this is the problem. We're supposed to play pretend. Hey, is everybody in the Middle East understands about Israel's nuclear weapons? Everybody does. So why is it anybody's business? Because the Middle East is where nuclear war is going to initiate. You know it as well as I do. It's going to be someplace in that godforsaken, yeah, I know what I just said, section of the world. It is. As soon as Netanyahu gets the idea that he is feeling like a big enough frog and he makes his jump, what do you suppose is going to happen? What do you suppose is going to happen when they go with bunker buster bombs into Iran? How long will it take for there to be a full-scale attack by maybe 7 or 8 countries against Israel? How will Israel respond? It is a small country. How many people live in Israel? 4 million? 5 million? What is the best deterrent for that type of invasion? Nuclear bombs. Ask North Korea. Ask Iran. And Israel knows it too. So a nuclear war comes to this sad, tired, burned out planet, which it damn sure might, it will start in the Middle East. That's why it's important. And Obama knows this, but he can only go so far because he knows he's in the crosshairs. He knows that every right winger in this country is trying to incite somebody to do something horrifying. We all know that. This pig, this filthy pig Limbaugh, you're not going to believe this, is at the Talkers Magazine, another filthy rag, getting a Freedom of Speech Award tonight. Yeah. And you know what the pig man will try to incite somebody to do, just like O'Reilly incited this crazed killer to go after Dr. Tiller. So I don't know, man. You pays your money and you makes your bet, right? Okay, so on Iran, the president acknowledged the U.S. overthrew that experiment in democracy all the way back in 1953. And he wants global nuclear disarmament. I'm all for that. More when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, 6 and a half past the hour. Yeah, Michael reminds me, we are a signatory and it has been ratified, the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. It goes back about 40 years. Excuse me, 41 years. Maybe 42. The only non-signatories, I think, are India, Israel, and Pakistan. Is that right? On Iraq, President Obama said, quote, I've made it clear to the Iraqi people that we pursue no bases, really? No claim to their territory or resources. Iraq's sovereignty is its own. That's why I ordered the removal of our combat brigades by next August. That's why we'll honor our agreement with Iraq's democratically elected government to remove combat troops from Iraqi cities by July. That's next month. And to remove all of our troops from Iraq by 2012. Now, obviously, Obama has pledged that the Bush administration's project of establishing Iraq as a permanent military garrison has been formally abandoned by the United States. On promoting democracy, quote, quote, Barack Obama said, quote, America does not presume to know what is best for everyone, just as we would not presume to pick the outcome of a peaceful election, end quote. Ooh, is he talking about Hamas? Robert Naiman says, this policy will be tested in the coming days. Lebanon is having parlamentary elections on June 7, which Hezbollah's coalition could win. Iran has presidential elections on June 12. So on the basis of the policy that Obama pledged in Cairo, we can work with any government that emerges from these elections. You think that's possible, Truth Seeker? On the Palestinians, Mr. Obama said, so let there be no doubt the situation for the Palestinian people is intolerable. America will not turn our backs on the legitimate Palestinian aspiration for a dignity opportunity in a state of their own. He went on to say, Israelis must acknowledge that just as Israel's right to exist cannot be denied, neither can Palestine's. The United States does not accept the legitimacy of continued Israeli settlements. This construction violates previous agreements and undermines efforts to achieve peace. It is time for these settlements to stop, end quote. Well, according to the pig man, the Israelis immediately ran out today and started constructing Obama huts. That's what he said. Or is it just more radio garbage? Everything that comes out of his mouth is radio garbage, but he's getting the Freedom of Speech Award tonight in New York at the Talkers Magazine Convention. Oh, my God. Now, back to this. The entire Arab and Muslim world will be watching to see how Obama backs up what he said about Palestine. Robert Naiman goes on on Afghanistan. Obama said, quote, make no mistake, we do not want to keep our troops in Afghanistan. We seek no military bases there, end quote. Okay. Obama told 60 Minutes that the U.S. must have an exit strategy in Afghanistan. But when Representative Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, tried to attach language to the supplemental requiring that the Pentagon submit an exit strategy to Congress, he was blocked by the House leadership, presumably acting on administration instructions. Nyman goes on, I was struck by the fact that the crowd vigorously applauded when Obama quoted the Quran thus, quote, the Holy Quran teaches that whoever kills an innocent, it is as if he has killed all mankind, and whoever saves a person, it is as if he has saved all mankind, end quote. Now, what made the vigorous response striking was the context. Obama was talking about violent extremists. At least in theory, U.S. policy is focused on separating these violent extremists from the broad population who support many of the goals articulated by violent extremists while rejecting their means. But, of course, these sentiments also apply to the United States. We have killed innocents in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. This week, our new chief ass-kicker in Afghanistan, General McChrystal, promised the Senate, quote, extreme measures, end quote, to avoid civilian casualties in Afghanistan. So if the United States continues to kill innocent people in Afghanistan, and according to the Times report yesterday, even the existing policies to prevent civilian deaths aren't being followed. If we continue to kill innocent people in Afghanistan, the Muslim world can point accusingly to Obama's quote, whoever kills an innocent, it is as if he has killed all mankind. This is what's puzzling to me. If there's anything Barack Obama is not, it is naive. He may be a naif where it concerns this kind of leadership or any kind of political leadership. How long has he been in politics? 7 years? 8 years? How long has it been? And granted, probably 90%, is that a fair number, of his education is from books and not from experience where it concerns political leadership. Is that a fair statement? I think so. I think it's a fair statement. So given that, then, why would Barack Obama quote from the Quran something that applies to us to a far greater degree at this point than to any faction in the Middle East, to anybody, any Arab faction, any Muslim faction, any Israeli faction. Don't forget, the number one killer in the Middle East is none of them. It is us. We are the number one purveyor of death and destruction in the Middle East. It's not Iran or Iraq or Syria or Israel or it is us. I wasn't sure why the audience applauded on that line, you know, as I listened to that. And I thought, oh, boy, that one's going to get dead silence. And it didn't. Pretty strange. So I wonder why, don't you, why Barack Obama would say that? Anyone who kills an innocent person is killing all of mankind. Then we have killed mankind a million times over just since 1991, haven't we? I mean, come on. You know, it's all madness, isn't it? Every bit of it. I appreciate Barack Obama's rhetoric. I really do. Every time he speaks, you know, I just like, whoa, good God, that's coming from an American president. And I'm still alive to see something like this. And, you know, I go back, like I said, I got my political awareness when they decided to kill Kennedy. And speaking of killing Kennedy, you know what tonight is, of course, don't you? It was just about this time, in 1968. June 5th, Kennedy, Robert Kennedy was shot. He died, he was wounded and then died about 20 hours later. He was shot after he made his victory statement in the California primary. He was 42 years old. Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m., June 6, 1968, and he had been shot by or the shooter, was identified as Sirhan Bishara Sirhan, 24 years old, who was born in Palestinian Jerusalem of Arab parentage and had lived in Los Angeles since 1957. Sirhan had been a clerk. You don't believe that story either, do you? That it was strictly Sirhan who killed Bobby Kennedy. I know you don't believe it. I know you don't believe it. Well, me? Do I believe that Sirhan acted entirely on his own in killing Bobby Kennedy? I guess to the same extent that I believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted on his own, and that James Earl Ray acted on his own. You know, on and on and on. Yeah, right. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
The number is 877-996-2556. We welcome your calls. We posted at MikeMalloy.com a video taken the other night in Jerusalem at a bunch of bars in Jerusalem as Barack Obama spoke. And the video was shot by Max Blumenthal. Who is the other guy? There's another guy. Anyway, we have it. You'll see it. If you go to MikeMalloy.com, it's up. It's pretty horrifying. We were trying to figure out some way we could get it on the air, and of course we can't because of the vile language that is used. I get this email from Eric. Mike, just watch the video from Israel. The Americans interviewed seem to be the typical uneducated American youth, and once again proves that America is morally bankrupt and lacks any kind of compassion toward any others. The world could no longer trust the United States to keep any kind of agreements or promises as long as a criminal Republican element is involved in the government. The hate just oozes out of every pore in American society, and the stench is becoming unbearable to the rest of the world. The more that comes out about the past 30 years, the more disgusting it becomes. America, it's time to grow up, Eric. and he doesn't say what country he's writing from, but anyway. Phone calls. Dave is calling from Chicago, listening to XM. Hey, Dave.
What's happening, Mike? You were having a little trouble. You were bewildered at the fact that Rush Limbaugh is being Freedom of Speech Award.
Yeah.
I think I can clarify it with an explanation that should get your seal of approval.
All right.
When you live inside of a country where you can broadcast to the masses and you decide to utilize lies and propaganda to the detriment and harm of every person inside that border, and to the harm and detriment of every soldier that guards that border without your head blown off, that is the ultimate free speech.
Yeah, that's true. But it's also, I don't know how. Listen, I got a real bad connection on you, Dave. Let me put you on hold for a few minutes and see if we get to a better cell. But you're fading in and out and a lot of static. Freedom of speech. I don't quite understand what any commercial entity means when they present another commercial entity with a Freedom of Speech Award. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution that talks about freedom of speech, I've got it right here, it says simply, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, blah, 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 or Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or the press. So why would this filthy pig bastard be getting a Freedom of Speech Award? To what extent has he been challenged by the federal government to the point where he has overcome the challenge by asserting his right to freedom of speech and therefore is deserving of an award? Talkers Magazine is a heap of garbage. The way you get acknowledgement in Talkers Magazine is to buy lots of advertising. I knew the guy who, Michael Harrison, who put it together 15 years ago, 18 years ago, when he was just struggling, trying to put together this thing together. And it's become nothing but a sounding board for right-wing screams and screeds. It's unbelievable. So, you know, the right-wing nest of sick bastards in this country is rewarding another right-wing bastard, sick bastard, who, as you point out, who is that? Dave. Oh, Jesus, he's gone. Well, it was a bad sell. But as he pointed out, when you live in a country where you can say the filth and garbage that Rush Limbaugh says and not be removed from the public airwaves, yeah, I guess there's lots of freedom in that country. I would disagree with that. To me, it just means there's an awful lot of corporate control. Remember, Limbaugh and the rest of the right-wing talk show people have put together a protection racket, protection agency. They protect corporate America. That is their sole function, to protect corporate America. And in order to do that, they have to come up with the most outrageous lies and deceptions and misinformation and disinformation and poison. They have to constantly work at keeping people at each other's throats. They have to constantly be denigrating anyone who even has the slightest inclination toward progressive attitude in politics, like Barack Obama certainly does. But it is vile. Even when Barack Obama, to this point, pretty much has acted solely in the interests of corporate America. I mean, goddamn, what has he done? Seriously, what has the president of the United States done that has trickled its way down to middle class and the working poor in this country? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Everything that's been done has been to shore up and defend the most predatory form of capitalism in the history of the human race. And that is the financial services industry in this country. And what is Barack Obama's reward for that? There are people talking about, well, you know what they're talking about concerning Obama. So to hell with Limbaugh and to hell with Talkers Magazine. Freedom of speech, my ass. If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly... Are you losing your...
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Huh. Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar.
It's about 25 before the hour. Don't forget, if you are seriously interested in keeping this program on the air, you might want to consider subscribing to our podcast. They're 25 cents a show when you buy it on a annual basis. It's $59.40 a year, I believe. Go to MikeMalloy.com and the information is there. We really do need you to support us in that manner. Okay? Seriously. Bill is calling from New Jersey. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Mike, I started straight on a slight misunderstanding here. I am originally from Jersey, but I'm being held hostage in South Carolina.
Oh, God, you have my sympathy.
Okay, yeah. But I wanted to make a comment that these guys that are doing this imprecatory praying, I believe, you know, they're not paying too much attention to what they follow as their guidebook, the Bible, because there is a commandment, if I recall, that thou shalt not kill, which makes them an accessory to the fact and perhaps a prosecutorial element.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but I found that most people who subscribe to a religious belief are hypocrites. Very few really follow the dictates in that religious book. I don't care if they're Muslim, Jew, or Christian. It doesn't really matter. And that's based on a lifetime of observing people who are religious, who claim to be religious or claim to believe in a God or a an avatar of God, whether it is Moses, Jesus, Muhammad. It doesn't make any difference. But the hypocrisy is the overriding element, I think, in most religious services. How can people gather inside a huge, multi-million-dollar cathedral, which is the big thing right now, you know, these big 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 member sewers is what I consider them to be. How can people do that, claim to be Christians, and know that within spitting distance of their beautiful sanctuary are people who are desperately in need of food or medical care or shelter? It's disgusting to me. You know, I wish there were a Jesus Christ. I wish he did have supernatural powers. I wish he would come back tomorrow or on Sunday and just through the miracle of his being the Son of God appear in all these churches and set them all on fire and just say, you know, I went through this once before when I drove the money changers out of the temple, and now I'm going to do it to you people who are holding these phony, fake-ass gatherings in my name. But I know that's not going to happen. So, what can I say, Bill? You know?
Yeah, I totally agree, man. And I just want to make a slight post-comment. You guys, the gumshoe thing tonight was great, and the bumper music was great, as always. You left me hanging. I want to hear more.
Well, Monday night, it'll all be there for you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it, Bill. And I didn't mean to misplace you in the great United States. From New Jersey to South Carolina. Oh, my God. Tim is calling from Detroit. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike, first of all, I love the Mike Malloy radio players, man.
Oh, thank you.
Good stuff.
We have a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, I love that kind of noir. Anyhow, I called this crazy church that you had put the number on the air.
Yeah. You called them?
I called them, the 502 number, et cetera, et cetera. I called the number. I got a machine.
Yeah.
I went on and on, you know. I mean, who would Jesus bomb? this whole business about, you know, blessed are the peacemakers. I quoted a few passages from the Bible, even though I'm a hardcore atheist.
Right.
And then I said, well, you know, you need to turn to your Lord and think about this whole concept of shooting people inside a church and not pray to your Republican Satan.
Then
I hung up, and I didn't think I'd get a call back. And about a few minutes later, I got a call from this number. But the funny thing about that was there was organ music being played, apparently, with you know, chanting, singing, praise the Lord and all that.
Oh, no.
And I kept saying, hello, hello, and somebody kept saying, hello, 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 and eventually they hung up. So I don't know if that was sort of a prank call in return or whatever that was.
I wouldn't be surprised. We called there yesterday and left a message. And I said on the message, you know, I do a radio program. I'm interested in talking about your Bring a Gun for God show, and never got a call back. So I don't know.
Even in the Middle Ages, because I read a little bit about religious history, were there cases where people would bring swords in the churches and so on? Did that occur?
I don't know. I have probably seen too many Errol Flynn movies, but it was always my understanding from watching a lot of movies when I was a kid that a church or a monastery or... of course, they didn't talk about synagogues and mosques when I was a kid going to the movies, but a church or a monastery was sanctified territory, and you were not allowed to, the king's men could not come in and grab a fugitive inside a church or a monastery or or whatever, you weren't supposed to bring your battle weapons inside the door either. I don't know if that is, like I said, too many movies or if that's real, but...
This sort of might be a new development in quote-unquote Christian theology, where the so-called Christians are allowed to be armed inside what they consider their holy temple.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Sure.
Okay, sir. Take care. Take care. John is calling from Mount Ulla, North Carolina. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Better than I deserve.
Is it Mount Ulla or Mount Eula?
You had it right the first time.
Mount Ulla. Okay.
And I'm sorry you have to carry a gun.
Well, I am too. I'm liable to shoot myself.
I heard yesterday, and I don't know that it's a fact, but I run an old country store down here, and
where is Mount Ulla? I went to school in North Carolina. Where's Mount Ulla?
Halfway between Greensboro and Charlotte.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I know where you are. You're along 85?
A few miles off, but we're like central of the Piedmont.
Gotcha. Okay.
All good roads lead to Mount Ulla.
Gotcha.
And they're saying that there's a bill in North Carolina that everybody will have to register the guns. And I call myself conservative, Democrat, but that's not right. If you borrow, if your best friend comes by and gets you, say, let's go bird hunting, and you say, well, I don't have a gun, no problem, I got a gun here. Let's go bird hunting. Okay, here we go. And if they catch you out there, it's a felony.
All right, a couple of questions. They're talking about you have to register 22 rifles, shotguns, 30 caliber deer hunting guns, or do you have to register handguns?
All of your...
Everything.
Long guns.
Really?
If you get caught out hunting with a gun that's not registered to you, you'll be... illegal.
All right, let me ask you, and I'm not trying to challenge you here, John. This is just a question. What do you have against gun registration?
What goes on in my house is my business.
But it's not in your house. You're going to be out in public, armed.
Yeah, but that means that I have to register all my shotguns.
But why is that? I mean, why is that a problem? I've been on the gun registration rolls in DeKalb County, Georgia, and probably the state, and damn sure, the FBI, for the past 19 years, and I've never had there's never been a problem. I've gone through George Bush's gun grab down in New Orleans. I've gone through all the hysterics from people that said Gore was going to do this and Clinton was going to do that. I don't have a problem. As a matter of fact, let me tell you the truth here. I like the fact that my gun is registered, or, well, several of them are registered. And the reason, if somebody ever breaks into my house, and it has to be when I'm not here, because if they try to break in when I'm here, there's going to be just a terrible situation. But if they break in when I'm not here and steal a weapon that I have here and then commit a felony with it, I want the investigators to make the clear connection immediately. Yeah, that's Mike Malloy's gun. Yeah, that was stolen. Yeah, here's the police report. Somebody broke into his house. I don't want there to be any doubt. Now, if that will assist, you see, in catching the predator or the thief, that's fine with me. I'm not worried about gun registration for a very simple reason.
I'm with you on that, Mike.
All right, but John,
somebody broke in my house and stole my guns, and I've got my numbers written down, and I give them to the police. And they've got that information now. But till then, what's in my house is in my house.
Well, I understand.
And if I go bird hunting with those guns, and, you know, like I say, my best friend comes by and says, I want to go bird hunting, and I said, man, I don't have a gun with me. He said, no problem, I got an extra shotgun.
Well,
here.
I understand.
And I'm going to commit a felony going bird hunting.
I understand, but you know what they're doing. What that is, what you're talking about, John, is a state law. So state government is a lot more responsive than federal government. So maybe what you ought to do is get together with people in North Carolina who oppose this and let the governor know, and let the legislators know, too. I got to move on. Thank you, John. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
We wouldn't need the police no more, because everybody would have a gun.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
Nobody'd ever get shot, cause everybody'd have a gun.
Makes sense. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? We'd go out and shoot things, we'd go out and shoot.
Inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Fat Charlie the Archangel sloped into the room.
It's 10 before the hour.
He said, I have no opinion
on the Malloy
about
program.
This.
Todd is calling from Smyrna, Tennessee. Hey, Todd, welcome to the program.
Yeah, glad you could be on the air there. What are we talking about tonight? Are we talking about gun control or hypocrisy in the church? Which one is it?
They sometimes intersect, don't they?
Well, what do you want to talk about?
What do I want to? I want to talk about peace, love, and freedom. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about both. Let's talk about gun control first, and then let's talk about hypocrisy in the church.
Well, go ahead.
Gun control. I heard your last conversation.
Well, wait, let me jump in before you get going, because there is no such thing as gun control in this country. Never has been, never will be. Keep this in mind.
What's registration?
Hold on. We are the largest manufacturer of weapons of death in the history of the human race. Gun control is non-existent. It's like fairies and elves. They don't exist. Okay?
Well, how would you define gun control?
I wouldn't. How would you define snarklebutt?
Well, wait a minute. If you can't define gun control, how can you say you don't have gun control?
If you can't define snarklebutt, why are you calling me?
I've never even heard of snarklebutt, so I don't know what
that
is.
There you go. I rest my case.
Are you saying we don't have gun control in this country?
Absolutely.
Do we have registration of guns?
Tell me where we have gun control. Now don't answer the question with another question. Just give me an example of gun control.
Gun control is when government.
I know. Don't define it for me. For Christ's sake, I know what the term means. Tell me where there is gun. If you want to go buy
if you want to go buy
a machine gun right now, can you?
Yeah.
If you want to go buy a tank right now, can you?
Can I carry it?
If you want to go buy a flamethrower right now, can you? If you want to go buy a military assault weapon right now, can you? If you want to buy a semi-automatic or a fully automatic assault weapon, can you? What do you mean there's gun control in this country? Are you out of your mind? And I think the answer to that is yes. So I'm going to move on. Thanks for calling. Ah! Gun control my ass. There is no, now, registration? There's some registration, all right. And what does that mean? That means that if you do decide to go buy yourself a fully automatic military assault weapon, somebody is going to want to know if you're a convicted felon or an escapee from a mental hospital. And when you buy that weapon, unless you buy it at a gun show, well, they're gun control. No, there isn't. You give me $5,000, my friend, and give me 4 hours, and I can come back with enough weaponry to arm a Marine platoon. Gun control my ass. Oh, what, somebody wants to hassle me? Oh, Jesus, Kathy. I don't want to. All right, go ahead. What do you want, Dan?
Mike, first time caller, first time listener.
Yeah.
Being a little disingenuous with that guy.
What does the word disingenuous mean in the context that you're using it?
I'm saying that you were playing a game with him. He wanted to talk about restrictions.
No. I wasn't playing a game with him at all, Dan. He was playing a game with me. There is no, you know, I'm not going to get into it again. I really am not. Not with you, not with anybody. This is Friday night. You people need to go the hell away from me. I don't like to talk about this topic anyway. I'm sick of this topic. There is no gun control in this country, and there never has been, and there probably never will. There might be some gun registration, and for anybody who is such a goddamn coward that they're afraid to go register their weapon because, oh, well, the government might come and get it. Are you really that much? Are you that cowardly? Are all you people who are afraid of registration, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think that someday you're going to hear a knock on your door and there's going to be what? A bunch of military people standing there with a gun? Let me tell you something. If it gets to the point, you morons, where there is the possibility that the United States military or some of these private contractors like the former Blackwater are going to come out, don't you think there would be enough advance notice so that we gun owners could lock and load and get the hell out of the house and get behind the nearest ridge and take the sons of bitches out one at a time as they showed up? You bunch of pansy-ass cowards. You really, really are. All of you boys and girls who are constantly whining to me about, well, gun control, gun control, gun control. I've been to these gun shows. I see these cowardly freaks standing there over their table full of weaponry, these big-bellied bastards who wouldn't know the meaning of the word courage if it came up and bit them on the ankle. I'm sick of you people. I don't want you people calling my program. Go away. Go away. Again, I can't stand the stink of a coward. I don't like hypocrisy. I don't like liars, and I don't like cowards, okay? And the only person I've ever had talk to me about gun control has been a stoned-up coward, absolutely fearful of his own shadow. Oh, the government's going to come. Well, you know, they're going to break into my house. Well, they're going to do this. Well, it's my house, my backyard, my gun, my woman. Yeah. I know where you're coming from. Go away. Go get drunk. And then clean your weapon. Jesus. Gun control. I'll see y'all. Man, I'm talking like these people now. I will see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney. Wherever you are.
I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. I'm going straight to hell.
Did you catch the ABC?